nanoscientists' device. Nanomachines had driven off the first peacekeeper attack. Giap had chosen broad daylight to make his assault, but inside the tunnels of Moonbase, the purifying effect of solar ultraviolet did not penetrate. That is why Giap had included special teams of civilians with powerful UV lamps to accompany his troops. He did not intend to be run off by invisible, insidious nanoweapons. Their base camp location had been carefully chosen to position them close to the two easiest passes over the Ringwall Mountains, while still placing them within the sheltering lee of the mountains themselves. Those solid piles of rock would protect them from the radiation pulse of the nuclear explosion. There was no need to worry about blast effects in the lunar vacuum. But even if there were, the mountains would shelter them, just as it will protect us from the radiation and heat pulse, Giap assured himself. Still, a tendril of worry gnawed at him. The missile must be accurately aimed, and its warhead must be fused at precisely the correct altitude. If it goes off too soon, or its aim is a fraction of a degree off target, we could be hit by the heat and radiation. He reached out a gloved hand to touch the armored roof of the tractor's cab. Enough protection against the slightly misaimed nuclear warhead, he wondered. More likely, the metal would serve as an efficient oven to roast us all to death. Shaking his head inside the helmet, he tried to push such fears away by attending to his duties. He established communications contact with L1, although the link was weak and strained with harsh bursts of static. The tractor comm sets were far from satisfactory, and sunspots or some other esoteric phenomena could hash up communications quite maddeningly. The image of a peacekeeper junior officer appeared on the little screen, wavering slightly and streaked with electronic snow. "We are on schedule," Giap informed the junior officer. "All my vehicles will be at their assigned base camp positions within 2 hours." "Very well," came the woman's voice through hissing static. "Missile launch will proceed on schedule unless you order otherwise."
"Yes, launch on schedule," said Giap, wondering how firm a comm link they would have once his vehicle was parked up close to the Ringwall Mountains.
The White House.
"Mrs. President, you've got real troubles with this Moonbase business." The President gave her staff chief a chilling look, the kind that had been known to cause lesser men to write out their resignations. The chief of the White House staff was an old hand at this kind of thing, though. He had been with the President since she had first run for the Senate, many elections earlier. "I mean," he said, hunching forward in the Kennedy rocker in front of her broad, modern desk, "the poll numbers are changing so fast we can't keep up with them."
"The trend?" she snapped.
"Swinging steadily in favor of Moonbase. Those news broadcasts Global's airing are turning the public's opinion around 180 degrees. The President turned her chair away from this man she knew so well, away from his earnest, worried face and the problems that slumped his shoulders. She looked out through the long windows to the flower garden that had soothed both Roosevelt's and everyone else who had sat at this apex of power in the Oval Office.
"I mean it, Luce," her staff chief said. "This has turned into real trouble."
"What about the new morality?" she asked, still without looking at him.
He did the unthinkable. He got up from the rocking chair and walked around her desk, forcing her to face him. Bending his knees slightly and leaning his liver-spotted hands on them so his eyes were on the same level as hers, he said gently, "They're not going to be enough, Luce. The public's demanding that you do something." She glared at him and swung back to the desk. He returned to the rocking chair.
"Are you telling me that O'Connor and Previs and all the other new morality leaders are abandoning me on this?"
"No, not at all," he said, raising his hands. "The hardcore of the faithful are with you as much as they've ever been. They see this fight on the moon as the battle between the forces of good and the evils of nanotechnology."
"So where's my problem?"
"It's the peripherals," he said with a sigh. "You've got the hardcore, they're solidly with you. But the hardcore isn't that many votes, Luce. The new morality's real strength has been in its numbers, yeah, but most of those numbers aren't fanatics. They're ordinary folks who think the new morality's ideas about cleaning up crime and vice are pretty good.
And now?
Now they're looking at their television screens and seeing the big bad UN attacking poor little Moonbase. And most of those people at Moonbase are Americans.
Who use nanomachines?
The staff chief shook his head. The voters don't care that much about the nanomachines. What's getting them worked up is the sight of a bunch of Americans getting attacked by the peacekeepers who are mostly foreigners.
But they elected me because I pushed the nanotech treaty.
That's not important to them now. As long as the moon people keep their nanomachines on the moon, the average American voter doesn't care a gnat's fart about it. The president glared at her staff chief for long, icy moments. He gave her a weak grin.
Don't blame the messenger for the message, he said.
She huffed at him, then reached out and flicked on her desktop computer.
I want to see these numbers for myself.
The staff chief leaned back in the rocker and watched her face as the data from the constantly ongoing public opinion poll flickered across her screen. When she finally looked up at him, she asked,
What should I do?
Call Foray and tell him to back off, maybe.
Don't be ridiculous. It's much too late for that.
At least tell him that you're concerned about the safety of the American citizens at Moonbase.
But they've declared their independence. They don't want American citizenship.
We don't know if that's just a ploy or not. Either way, there are probably a lot of men and women up there who want to keep their citizenship and come back to the States as soon as they can.
The president shook her head. I can't weasel on Foray. I've been one of his strongest supporters. If I turn on him now, the word of this administration will be worthless all around the world. Nobody would trust us again.
I'm thinking about your re-election campaign.
She waved a hand in the air. That's next year, for God's sake. By that time, Moonbase will be under UN control and this whole flap will be forgotten.
Her staff chief still looked worried.
All right, the president said. So Yamagata will be running Moonbase and taking over the spacecraft market. If Masterson Corporation goes for it, what am I going to do about it?
Once the opposition starts gnawing on that bone. She shook her head stubbornly. They're already starting to make noises in the Senate, he insisted. Joanna Brudnoy's been talking with half the committee chairman on the Hill.
It's a fait accompli, the president said curtly. In another 48 hours or so, the peacekeepers will have taken over Moonbase, and this whole problem will resolve itself.
Maybe, the staff chief said softly. But what happens if Moonbase drives the peacekeepers off? They did it once, you know.
She scoffed at him. That's impossible, and you know it.
Yeah, but still. Don't you intend to sleep? Lev Brudnoy asked his wife.
Joanna sat in the exact center of the largest sofa in their living room, her eyes riveted to the big window wall screen above the dark fireplace. I couldn't sleep if I tried, Lev, she replied. Not with this going on.
The screen showed the view from the cameras atop Mount Jaeger. The peacekeepers' vehicles were slowing to a halt at the base of Alphonse's Ringwall Mountains. They were arranging themselves in a single, thin, undulating line that snaked along the flank of the mountains, each newly arriving tractor taking its position at the end of the constantly growing line. The camera's resolution was fine enough to spot individual soldiers, if any appeared, but the vehicles stayed tightly buttoned up. Joanna could see the spokes of their springy wheels and the cleats on the tractor's treads, but no person got out of the vehicles.
They're waiting, Joanna thought. Waiting for the missile that will be launched from L1. Then they'll attack. They'll storm Moonbase, and Doug will try to stop them, and they'll kill my son and destroy everything.
Brudnoy sank his lanky frame onto the sofa next to her, murmuring, At least we could go upstairs and watch from bed. Nothing is going to happen for another 9 or 10 hours at least.
You go if you're getting sleepy, Joanna said, not moving her eyes from the screen.
Edie Elgin had been speaking for nearly an hour, but now her voice had stopped and the screen was silent. He shrugged and sat beside her for several minutes. This is like watching ice melt, he grumbled. It's hypnotic. Don't you feel your eyes growing heavy?